Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It's Austin Walker. It is October 24th, 2016. You're back in the bunker, and I'm happy to say we have a new member of Waypoint.
Yeah.
Danielle Riendo is joining us here in the bunker.
Yeah.
And as always, Patrick Klefik is I almost said phoning it in, which is not the good.
Wow.
That's
great.
Not it.
Wow. I'm really going down on the
phoning
pecking order.
Right.
Thanks, Danielle.
Well, I feel like, Patrick, it's been a great couple of weeks, great couple of months with you, and just moving on.
I hope you know if that happens, it just means your website is cursed. Like, I have a long legacy of ash that
it's
I leave
true.
Behind.
Oh,
so
no.
Be careful what you wish for, Austin Walker.
So this is a big week, not only because Danielle is joining us, but because like this is our launch week. This is the last podcast we will record before waypoint.vice.com is a real thing that you could go to on your internet. You also go to waypoint.zone or someone...
Zone.zone?
I don't know if anyone bought us zone.zone yet, but somebody bought us bazinga.zone.
I thought Steve did it. Oh my God, bazinga.zone. I'm beside myself with the naming happiness.
No, I'm right now, zone.zone does not seem to go to our content, to our hashtag content.
I just checked that website, too.
We'll
check that at the same time.
Good. Maybe we hit it with the DDoS. Maybe we hit too many
that's
of us
what
at
it
the
was.
Same time.
That's what it was.
If you can hear us, who knows? Like, I don't know. The internet has been under constant attack.
Well, we're in a bunker.
That's
so
right.
We wouldn't know anyway. That's... You know, there's a whole world up there, and we're just like, well, we've got our condensed soup for the last, 15 years.
That's
we're
going
to be okay.
We'll be all right.
We'll be fine.
Live from the bunker forever. There's
straight up stopped me from doing my job on Friday. Like I just stopped and started playing Dark Souls because I literally couldn't do anything.
Totally. Which is a shame because then you had to play Dark Souls where also you had to keep fighting that boss that was killing you.
It's also your job.
Yeah. Oh, hey, okay, good. Time to check on your fucking homework, Patrick.
Wow. Wow.
Did you beat that boss?
I don't know. Did you learn how to say people's last names yet, Austin? You're
Danica,
being very aggressive this morning.
Herod. Her name is Danica Herod,
like
and she's our great
store.
Department store.
Yep.
And she's our great social editor. Hi, Danica.
You paused. You paused before you said her last name.
I did, but that was because I wanted to make sure I got it right. You know, measure twice, cut once.
That's correct.
With people's names. With people, also.
With people.
I did have two pieces of homework, one of which I probably just shouldn't say anything about. I don't want to jinx anything for our stream. But the first one I did take care of. I did find it in a box in my house, and I will find that, and I will bring it with.
Okay, and we'll see if it works.
New York. We'll see if it works. I don't have the equipment to see if it works, but we'll find out in New York.
Tune into twitch.tv/waypoint this weekend to find out what the hell we're talking about.
Exactly.
A little tease.
Or not, if it's broken. Well, if it's broken, we'll still talk about it. It'll
yeah.
be fine. I did. I beat this boss in Dark Souls, and I finished that DLC, and I'm proud of myself, but also that DLC is not very good. So,
Is that it? Is there more DLC coming, or is that it?
There is. So weirdly, or maybe not weirdly, but they segmented this DLC. So there's two coming out. There's one that this fall, and there's one coming early next year. With Bloodborne, they delayed the DLC and then just smashed the two of them together so that it felt substantial. And they're not doing this with Dark Souls 3. They're segmenting it out, in all likelihood, so they can get something out this year rather than waiting for both to come out next year. But consequently, this feels very light. I probably spent maybe 3 hours on this one boss that I, I'm planning to write about it, and I'll get into the mechanics of it in a piece so that people can kind of avoid it if they don't want to know sort of the trick to it, because there is sort of a trick that's interesting, but I guess I'll describe it in the vaguest terms as endurance. In order to overcome it, and that was really a lot of it puts a lot of your skills to the test in a Dark Souls game of you cannot fumble your way through this boss. You have to have a deep memorization of a lot of what's going on in order to have any chance of making it to the end, which is true a lot of the time for Dark Souls, but not to the extreme that this boss demands. Often you can fumble your way a little bit through a Dark Souls boss if you just kind of spam the R1 button, and
right.
It's just not going to happen here. But yeah, this new wintry area is sparse. It's very difficult, which I guess is fine and made it a little bit distinctive. But otherwise, you know, if you don't have as much trouble with the boss as I did, it's very easily that you could finish this in about 2 hours.
Okay.
And there are only two bosses, one of which is optional, and it's so optional that I've had to confer and look up YouTube videos in order how to find it.
Oh, my God.
And it just feels like it should be more... I'll say this. The path to finding it will be obvious to people who play the game when it's live, because people are going to point to how the trick, you know, the way the path there. But if you were playing it like I did in offline mode, because I had a patch that was available ahead of everyone else playing the game, it's not obvious. And in fact, I had, like, once I had told some other folks that were playing it ahead of time that there's a second optional boss, I had to explain to them how to get there, and that's probably a bad sign for a piece of, you know, this DLC in context of the whole game, it's not a big deal, but this DLC in context of coming 6 months after the game's release date and people are hungry to play more Dark Souls, it's frustrating when you cannot guarantee you will find all the stuff that you want to encounter.
Is it tough to get into the DLC in the way that Dark Souls DLC sometimes is? Like, literally to find where it is?
I mean, if you weren't to look it up, I guess it would be kind of frustrating, because you essentially would just be jumping between warp points. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you would stumble across the DLC NPC that triggers everything. I mean, this is in a long line of tradition all the Souls games and Bloodborne, in which the DLC is not something you purchase it, and then the game doesn't pop up with a menu that says, do you want to play the DLC?
There it is. It's just in the world.
It's somewhere in there. Yeah.
It is literally just hidden away in the world somewhere, and you have to find it. And for some people, that is attractive.
Yep.
And I totally understand that, but it's also why, alongside any of these DLC announcements, you'll see articles that are like, how to get to the DLC? And this is literally the only game that exists for.
Right.
Like, no other game makes it difficult to find the stuff you paid for.
Yeah, because, like, normally the way you get to your DLC is, like, you go to the PlayStation Network and you give it $12, and then, got the DLC.
Just open it right up.
Totally.
Little gift.
Yeah. Anything else? Have you been playing, Patrick?
You want to
hit briefly?
Plucking away at the new Battlefield, but you know, I think it seems like a fairly, like, okay campaign. But I'll say, you know, I admire that DICE is trying to do some interesting things with it. I just started playing a mission this morning where I think the framing is interesting for a lot of what they're doing. You know, there's been a lot of written about the tutorial to the game already, where they take the fact that, you know, lots of soldiers died exceptionally quickly in World War One as a way of, like, every time you die, you move on to a next tutorial section. Mm-hmm. And there is sort of a it lists their name and when they died, as sort of a way of humanizing, you know, this war that they're kind of knowingly hyperbolizing. And this mission that I just started this morning takes place on involving Italy, and it's the mission opens with this father looking at old photos of his time in the war, and his daughter coming up and asking questions about it. And the mission is narrated by the father explaining to his daughter what he's doing as you're doing those actions.
Oh, that's interesting.
In the game.
It feels like that game is filled with these, like, vignettes that are, like, a bunch of different types of frame stories, which is an interesting way of delivering a kind of war story.
Yeah, like there's one that I just finished that has an unreliable narrator. So it is trying to do interesting things. It is not the most amazing, like, the actual, like, moment to moment campaign stuff of it is not as interesting as the framing, but it is trying to do stuff with the framing that I think is noteworthy and interesting.
I really wish that Star Wars Battlefront had something like that, in that, like, even if it wasn't like, I don't need necessarily a huge sprawling campaign that has like an epic singular storyline, but like give me these little snapshots of what's happening in the world, and like that can be really evocative and cool.
A hook. Yeah. Are you interested? Yeah, I had the same problem with Star Wars Battlefront. It was like, yeah, there's a cool battle and it's Star Wars.
And it's
But
love
I don't know why I'm doing it.
Love them stormtroopers.
Yeah, exactly. I'm shooting them.
Yeah. Cool. So it's interesting you bring that up, Patrick, because I actually played something this weekend that was not a video game, but that was similar in trying to handle a really like difficult topic with surprising grace. And it actually shouldn't be that surprising because it's actually an old game and it's a tabletop role playing game. I'm going to tell you guys about an RPG,
about
a role playing game with dice. I got to be part of a thing called Role Play, ROLL Play, which is a Twitch channel and a YouTube channel. A couple of people who I really respect, this guy, JP and Adam Kobel.
JP's great.
Adam's great. They are people who I look up to a lot. Also joining us on that were Matthew Mercer, who's you might know as the voice of McCree. He's also the voice of the main dude in Titanfall 2 coming out later this week.
Excellent.
And then Taika Brahe was on that stream, he did very well. We got along really well.
Good.
Is what I'll say. And we played a game called Dogs in the Vineyard. Which came out in 2004. It was by a guy named Vincent Baker, who has kind of twice deeply impacted the tabletop role-playing game scene. So, like, when I say tabletop role-playing game, the thing I think goes into most people's minds is, like, D&D, and you think, like, okay, I'm going to get a +1 sword, and I'm going to kill an orc better because I have that +1 sword. And it's, like, maps that are, like, carefully drawn out, and you're exploring dungeons. And Dogs in the Vineyard came out 12 years ago and was one of the first big steps into blowing that up. That and some other games like Burning Wheel. Dogs in the Vineyard has the most like unique setting I've ever played in a game, probably. In that, one, the setting isn't firm. The setting is like kind of open to interpretation, and you can kind of push it and pull on it as you will. And in 2004, that was kind of a rare thing. Or 2004. Jesus. And I'll just read the introduction to this game, and like you'll see why this is weird.
Yeah.
Dogs in the Vineyard is about God's watchdogs, young men and women called to preserve the faithful in a hostile frontier territory. I'm dipping into my like southern voice by mistake.
Oh, I love it. This is great.
They travel. I'm just going to do it in this voice. Get ready.
Do it up.
They travel from town to isolated town, carrying mail, news, and doctrine, healing the sick, supporting the weary, and pronouncing judgment on the wicked. One early playtester said what she loves about the game. A town welcomes you with celebration and honor, but what you're there to do is stir up dirt and lay bare its sins. The setting is a fantasy inspired by pre-statehood Utah, the Deseret Territory in the early mid-19th century. Picture a landscape of high mountains, icy rivers, and cedar woods, falling away westward into scrublands, deserts, buttes, and swells. The summer skies are heartbreaking. The winters are long and killing. You're basically like, it's unspoken that you're Mormon, but it's like vaguely
you're
Mormon.
You're probably Mormon.
It's but it's like fantasy Mormon. It stays away from specifics so that when you're dealing with the very difficult things of like, oh, you're basically a paladin of God who is like being sent into these Western towns to like figure out who's cheating on who and who is stealing money from the church. Like it isn't throwing too much shade, but it still is grounded enough to be like, oh, and the relationship with the natives is a little stretched thin. It like digs into that a little bit. And the thing that's so incredible is like all of the encounters and all of the things that you actually roll dice for are, you know, obviously you can get into gunfights and like that's kind of a big deal. It's like you're the people who have guns and that gives you a great deal of authority on top of the religious authority you have. But also just like the stakes tend to be like, I'm trying to convince you to tell me that your cousin is up to some shit. And even though that's what the scene is, it ends up having the drama of like an HBO original series or something, because you like roll dice and your opponent rolls dice and then you kind of like bet the dice against each other, almost like it's poker or something. And it was just like a really fantastic experience, and it's a game I've wanted to play for a long time. That's gonna go up somewhere on the internet. Check my
Dogs
Twitter.
Dogs in the Vineyard.
Dogs in the Vineyard is the name of the tabletop game. It's like people who follow tabletop games closely, this shouldn't be news, but it's one of those things that's like, oh right, this exists. If all you thought of tabletop games was D&D or even like Vampire the Masquerade or something, like, oh, there's this huge world of independent tabletop games that I hope hope to actually give some coverage to over the next year or two, for sure. So that was my, like, big...
That sounds amazing.
And other than that, I played, like, the opposite thing, which was Mini Metro on iOS, which has been out on PC for a while.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, it's getting to where I'm seeing lines in my sleep. It's a game where you build a
subway lines
basically, yeah. or you can have trains or whatever, depending on what city you're in. And it's like almost like the kind of transportation problems of a game like SimCity or City Skylines, except boiled down into a really abstract format where you're just kind of connecting circles to squares to triangles. And the people in the circles need to get to the squares and the triangles. And you have limited resources in terms of how many trains you have and how many bridges or tunnels you have. So getting across waterways is really tough. And it's just, like, super good. It's super good, and it just sounds good. So check that out for sure. Danielle, have you been playing any video games?
Oh, my God. I have been playing so much Mafia 3. It's, like, ridiculous. That's what I'm seeing when I close my eyes. I'm seeing, like, those roads, the bayous with the trees kind of going by.
And those, like, pinkish sunlight.
God, that pinkish sunlight. I definitely, I spent some time just running in the bayou. I'm really weird. Like, when I play an open world game, so
where's
like,
this going? Keep going.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Okay, I'm a runner in real life, and the way I like to explore places in real life is on my feet. I like to run and explore a new place. I also kind of do this in open world games, too. I did this in The Witcher. I did this in one of those Saints Row games.
So, like, you eschew the use of horses or cars in open world games.
Not entirely, but for, like, a day. I definitely will. And I'll be like, where can I go on foot? Where can I, like, run? And I was like, I'm just Lincoln Clay running in the bayou. This was a way of experiencing this game, I guess.
And maybe a mistake, because that bayou was filled with alligators.
Yeah, I learned that one the hard way. I died a few times. I got a little chomped on. And then I kind of got my rhythm right. You know, I sort of did the thing where, you know, I was like, okay, swim slow, swim slow, swim slow. And then, like, speed right up right when that alligator's, like, going for the chomp. So I got good at that.
Nice. Yeah,
there's a whole metagame going on.
So how far into it are you, or have you basically spent all of your time exploring the bayou?
I am probably 60% of the way through the game.
Cool.
Because I've been playing a lot, I've been playing a lot. And I've also been, you know, totally just screwing around a lot and just running in the bayou. And also just looking for every Playboy and every, you know, painting and all that other goofy stuff.
Yeah, what do you think about those collectibles, actually? Because, for people who are listening, there are collectibles in this game. There have been collectibles in every Mafia game.
Yeah.
And one of the ones that's been long running, my understanding, is the Playboys.
That, yes.
Like, spread throughout the open world, there are Playboys.
There's a lot of Playboy.
There are a lot. There are also, like, Hot Rod magazines, Vargas paintings.
And
which
communist
are,
propaganda.
Yes, which,
as well.
which felt, that's the one that feels a little shoved in there.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We get it, Red Scare, like, but it just doesn't feel super legit to just have a ton of straight up Soviet propaganda pasted on. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe New Orleans in the 1960s was just like, you know, there was just straight up like, yo, come to Russia. Painted on the walls, but I don't know.
Yeah, it seems a little weird. Like, oh, I have my little sort of like shanty house in the bayou, and you know what I'm going hard for. It's communism.
Sputnik.
Sputnik.
Love that Sputnik.
Exactly.
Love the Sput.
Exactly. I'm really loving the game.
No, don't ever say that.
I love that Sput. Just,
come on.
Okay, name of the
sorry.
Podcast.
No. I know this is marked as explicit on iTunes, but you're going to get us kicked off.
Love your Sput.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Don't you?
So what do you think about like the Playboys and the Vargas stuff and like
It's fine. Like, it's giving me an excuse to run around I needed an excuse. I love to, like, see the little vignettes and, like, the little things they put together. I'm the person who, like, likes to sidle up to all the little people and hear their little conversations and things like that. So I love that kind of detail, and it just sort of gives me an excuse to do it. But it's, you know, there's a whole lot of Playboy in there, and like it's fine. I mean, they're not like even the real covers, I don't think. Like they're
Are they
sort
not
of like
the real covers?
I mean, I keep seeing the same sort of thing over and over again. So maybe I've just been collecting too much Playboy. That's the real problem here.
the one thing I actually like about the Playboys in this, and I think this is a change from Mafia 2, is that there are a number of them that come with articles now. And the articles,
really?
Yeah, like, so if you flip through them, because you can open them up, and it's like, oh, it's whoever the model of the month is. And then I'd say like a tenth of them, maybe more than that, have like, oh, and an interview with Stanley Kubrick.
Sure,
an interview
yeah.
with Timothy Leary. And like full, like 12, 13
excited.
Page.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should go home and look through those Playboys.
You should like, really do that.
There are actually
yeah.
some things in there that are like, oh, wow, like you understood that like maybe just putting up the naked ladies was like not using this archive to its fullest potential.
Yes.
Like in terms of like trying to make the space feel like the time, right?
I mean, particularly in the 60s, like that's where a lot of writers of color actually
totally.
Had their place and like actually did wonderful journalism.
Totally.
So, yeah, that's a cool nod.
And every now and then there are also issues that have like, oh, it's this model naked. And then like the next two pages, like, oh, and it's her like just doing stuff in her daily life.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just cool to see that fashion. And like there was one where it's a woman who's like the note under her, it was her in a phone booth just like making a call, fully clothed, and then underneath it was like she's a phone addict, whenever she sees a phone she stops what she's doing and makes a call, and like
wow.
I had to be like, what is okay, like was that a thing, were there people who, is that the equivalent of like taking being addicted to Instagram or something,
yeah.
like what is it at that time where you were like, oh, there's a phone booth, I have to call somebody, let them know that I'm in wherever, you know, and
like a postcard thing,
right,
or something.
It's like a postcard,
yeah
right.
yeah yeah.
Exactly. So that was neat.
That's pretty cool.
What do you think generally of Mafia?
I'm in love with it.
Okay.
Wow. It's probably
that's a strong.
I know. It's probably my shoe-in for Goaty at
Jeez.
This point. Yeah.
Okay.
I just
okay.
love it.
Man. Okay. This is so good.
Like I definitely agree that there are weaknesses to
of
this
course.
Game. Like yeah, there's way too much filler. Like the fact that I'm complete, you know, all the sort of little tiny side missions that you're doing to sort of make your associates happy, those are all kind of samey, and yeah, everybody's kind of saying the same thing about that stuff, which is a little bit a little boring, a little rote, but mm-hmm. for the most part I love the world, I love the character, I love the writing, I love that it's finally a AAA game that's attempting to say something,
right.
whether it says it completely successfully or not is, you know, that's up for debate, but I just
like,
love
not,
that there's
not
something there.
Ducking
yes.
anything. There was this great conversation over on Game Informer in which JV Gwaltney.
Gwaltney.
There you
I
go.
I called him Gunwalt once. So
oh, that's a good
I,
name.
I
though.
Had to actually
JV
really learn.
JV Gunwalt. That's actually my Dogs in the Vineyard character. That's
JV
my,
Gunwalt. Yeah.
They had a really great conversation about how like this game might be more influential than it is good. That like
sure.
3 years from now, the hope is you have some AAA developers who are like, yeah, yeah, like I can make the case now to my bosses that we should make a game that's actually about X, Y, or Z instead of being about an analog to X, Y,
yes.
or Z.
Yes, yes.
The other thing that I saw on Twitter this weekend was Steve Gaynor doing two things. First, uploading these like really great 15 to 20 second clips of Lincoln Clay just being a badass killer, just like
sure.
rolling into a place, kicking down the door, like ducking behind cover in the best way, and then like popping up with a revolver. And just like the game is really good at expression in expression through combat in that way.
Yeah.
And then the second thing he did was, and I should have seen this coming from a mile away, was he compared it to Far Cry 2.
Of course he did.
He said, more than any other game that's come out since, Mafia 3 reminds me of, very whisper voice, Far Cry 2. And it took me a bit to like dig into that, but I think I see it.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I'll have to start giving it some real consideration when we talk about the end of the year. I don't know.
The thing that sets it apart, I think, is that it is set in a very specific time and place.
Yeah.
And there are so few games that do that. And I think Far Cry 2 did that so incredibly well. It actually really embodied.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You sort
yeah.
of in that time and place. The only other thing I will say about it is it's just fun and it's just cool and it's just awesome to be playing a game that is both fun and also like trying to make a stand for something,
yeah.
but is also a video game ass video game.
Yep.
There's something great about that and it's something super rare and Oh, I'm really liking it.
So I go back and forth about that a lot. Like, I sometimes I come from a space that's like a little radical in thinking. Maybe I don't think this as much as I used to, but there was a time when I was like, fuck trying to make AAA stuff leftist or politicized or radical, or like, that's not, the form is never going to allow for that. The you know, big business is always going to get in the way of actually saying anything meaningful or having any effect. What we really need is indie games, or not even indie games. I would eschew, at the time, I would have eschewed ever saying the
one
words indie games.
One person studios.
Right, exactly.
Yes.
I would have said independent games.
Completely independent.
Or alt games or whatever that actually tackle stuff that come from marginalized backgrounds, etc. But it's difficult to actually then see something like Mafia 3. Not difficult. It's like, oh, seeing it happen does like scratch an itch a little bit. Or like seeing it happen does remind me that maybe there is a space for big budget media to weigh into something like this and actually feel, you know, not legitimate, not just legitimate, but like feel intentional and yes. weighty. Like, again, speaking to Charles Webb, seeing some of the stuff that's in that game, it's like, oh, no one needed them to write this game this way. And they did. So I kind of want to, it's definitely shaking some of my more outsidery perspectives.
There's great value in the mainstream. And I always kind of put it in the way of like, okay, every kid is exposed to more mainstream things, and kids growing up who might need something that shows a different perspective may not have a clue about some tiny indie designer or some tiny one person alt game maker, but they'll see the poster for this. And, you know, not necessarily specifically this, but, you know, that general idea about mainstream having actual value. And,
totally.
Yeah.
Well, and what's also, you know, difficult is that you have to look at this in a much longer time spectrum, right? So it's like the alt game scene, you know, indie games, like however you want to speak towards the stuff that is non-AAA. That stuff is developed and reacts a lot faster to one another in a way that is just impossible on the scale of AAA, right? So like Mafia 3 is probably in development for 3-4 years at least. And so any effect that it has will be largely meaningless on games that are already in development, or that impacts will be minimal relative to, let's say, a game that decides to tackle or is influenced by similar subjects that is just going into pre-production now or a year from now. That game comes out 4 years from now. So it's like I think the frustration that people have with these games is totally understandable, but that it's also, you have to be slightly sympathetic to just the scale of time that they work on. And so it's like Mafia 3 could have an enormous impact, but that it either won't be obvious until it's 10 years in retrospect, or it won't be until a game that is just talked about now that gets the approval to go through pre-production now because Mafia 3 did well, but we won't see anything about that for years to come.
Yeah, we as consumers, I think, have a very specific like consumption time scale in place. It's like even faster than indie game development, even faster than, you know, anything else. Like everything else takes time. Even sports, like a season of sports takes a long time, but you can watch, you could follow an entire season of sports of one team in a day or two, right? Like I want to see what the Eagles did in the year 1992. I can watch that whole thing, or I can watch an NFL Films documentary on it very quickly. Or you could do the same thing with a TV show, or like you think about like a Netflix show. It's like you burn through it super quick. So it is really weird to that can produce a certain expectation, I think, of like, oh. Or it's not even about producing an expectation. I think it's actually more natural than that. I don't want to demean that necessarily. Like, oh, when you see stuff, when you play stuff, when you read stuff, it affects what you want from other things. And it turns out things take a while to make.
Yeah.
So it's one of the reasons I like writing so much, is that I could write a thing today and I could read something tomorrow that makes me think completely differently about it. I could read a counter argument. I could read someone who adds to it and then write a new thing by the end of the week. And that's really great and reactive in a way that I value. So speaking of reacting to things, it sounds like the old strike is on.
Oh, yeah.
The SAG-AFTRA strike is happening. There's a picket line today.
Yeah, the first one's today.
Where can people find out more information about that, Patrick?
Well, if you want to monitor sort of a lot of the voice actors and folks that are kind of like weighing in on it, there's a hashtag called Performance Matters, which is where you can probably see. I was looking at it a little bit this morning, so you've got different voice actors kind of across the spectrum sort of weighing in, whether they're directly affected by this or are sort of in solidarity with the folks that are striking. And so you can follow that if you want to get sort of a better sense of like at the heart of what's happening.
Right.
I imagine that hashtag will give you a really good sense of that. I wouldn't be surprised if there was some coverage of that strike happening today that might provide a little more perspective. And there's just been kind of articles have been written around it. Like I've known this was a thing. I'd heard about it in the past, but actually one of our sister sites, Motherboard, did an interview with one of the voice actors from Fallout 4 who played Kellogg, one of the first villains that you kind of run into in that game. And, you know, he recorded his part without knowing the game he was working on. So like he, you know, contributed greatly to Fallout 4. And didn't know he was part of Fallout 4 because Bethesda was trying to keep that under wraps.
Right.
And, you know, one of the arguments I think I've seen about why that's a problem and one of the things that the voice actors are asking for is more clarity on the project they're working for is that, you know, if you knew you were working on Fallout 4,
what you might
charge would be a little bit different than, like, a tiny indie project that you think they wouldn't be able to afford more. And so you can see Bethesda's argument, right? Like, I think that you can understand why they, you know, the video game industry is notoriously secretive. I think far too much a degree that is very unnecessary for a game called Fallout 4.
Yeah.
You know, people know that game's coming. You don't have to, you know.
And it doesn't even, like, there are going to be voice actors who know it's Fallout 4. There are going to be voice actors who are like, oh, I'm talking about Vault 93. And if they want to be, if they're the type of people who are tuned in, they'll know. And so those people sign NDAs and say, like, hey, everybody must sign an NDA about the stuff. And so it ends up, for me, being, I don't know, it feels so punitive and so restrictive. Because think about if this was happening in the movie industry, if, like, you were signed on by Disney to record voiceover dialogue for something. And then you found out later that it was the new Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, if I had fucking known that, like, guess what? Like, that contract wouldn't have been good enough. Like, I know that would be a big budget thing. I know I'd be contributing to something that's going to bring in a bank. Like, I would have negotiated around that. Or I would have been really excited to go do that. Like, I would have prioritized that. Like, whatever. So it's one of those things that only makes sense in this world where everything is a secret. Like, where video games that have a heritage going back to a time when, in Japan, obviously, real names of people weren't even used in the game credits, right? Like, it's such a strange industry we're in.
Yeah, I've never quite been able to wrap my head around that part of it. Like, you know, especially for sequels that are obvious, right? You know, like, there's certainly something to be said about being secretive for something that is new or surprising, in which that may be part of the promotional effort, is that surprise. But this idea that, you know, tiptoeing around the fact that they're going to make another Fallout. I mean, I feel like maybe Bethesda learned something from that, because then they've already announced that the next Elder Scrolls is coming, and that's the game they're working on.
Right.
It's like, no shit you are.
Yeah,
and,
of course.
And so just say that, and then you lose, you know, you just drop this pretense that you're not making the game that everyone knows you're making.
Right.
Yeah, and don't all these artists have to sign NDAs anyway if they're working on something? Like, they know the lines. They know the content of the story. It's kind of like, hey, you know, your argument kind of falls flat under that.
And at that point, it does feel like a way to have a head up in negotiation.
Yeah.
You know? So it's a messy thing, and I'm very curious to see how all this shakes out and to see how things are affected. You know, something like a quarter of games or something have voice actors who are in the union. So I don't know that we'll see a huge change in what's coming out, but
we might go back to the days where it was like the programmer, you know, Ed has an interesting voice. Put him in the voice booth. You know, like, I wonder if this goes on long enough, if we're going to see something like
the
that.
The thing is,
you know,
that, like, so projects already projects that were already undertaken will continue and will be finished. And then it feels like there's, like, going to be, unless this goes on for years, it feels like voice actors could, once there's negotiation or once there's an agreement reached, could then go into the VO booth and finish or do new work.
Sure,
you know, like,
sure, that makes sense.
Because of what we were just talking about, which is the long timelines on game production, right? That, like, by the time Mafia 4 is done, by the time the new Elder Scrolls is done or whatever, like, I bet this contract negotiation
probably
stuff is
be
over,
figured out
right?
by then. Yeah.
But maybe not. We'll see.
I want Ed in there anyway.
Yeah. Shout outs to Ed. The programmer.
Ed in programming.
Ed with a good voice.
Yeah. Hey, Ed really believes that performance matters.
Yeah.
He does.
He
true.
Sure does.
anything else happening over the weekend in terms of news and stuff?
There's a little bit of, you know, people are really picking apart that Nintendo Switch trailer, trying to figure out what else is hidden in there. There seems to be some sort of weird brouhaha this morning about Nintendo confirming that the footage on all the screens was not in real time, that was added in post.
Yeah, dog, that's
which is,
how videos
Yeah,
which,
that's, how, that's how they
yeah, that's not like that's not something you should hold against Nintendo. And also because it was a top secret project, my guess is they were trying to limit whatever information the people who are a part of those production, you know, I mean, just stop it. That's not a story. That's not Nintendo's a weird company, but that's not something that's weird. That's just how
there's
things
so
work.
Much to get upset about in 2016.
Yeah, there's
there so
sure
much.
Is.
There's so
there
much.
Sure is.
God damn. Anyway. Well,
but they people have picked apart that trailer to find. It does look like, you know, the question has been whether it's going to have a touchscreen,
right.
Which would be, you know, Mario Maker is probably one of the most interesting games that Nintendo's made in the past 10 years, and it would be awfully tragic if they lost the ability to... You can't make that game without a touchscreen.
Yeah.
You just can't.
Yeah.
Or the version you make of it is not great. you know, I think there's been this hope that not only would there be another Mario Maker, but that it might open up this whole door to Nintendo doing a sort of a line of those games. And it sounds like, if you look at the trailer, it appears that there is a spot for a stylus. Nintendo has also said that there are features about the machine that have not been announced. And then Laura Kate Dale, who has been one of the more regular gaming reporters who her you know, based on what's been announced, her track record looks pretty great on what she has talked about with that machine ahead of release based on her sources. And she put something out over, I think it was over the weekend, saying that, so with the Nintendo Switch, part of what makes it work is that how it operates removed from the base has to be the same as how it operates on the base.
Huh.
So that's one reason why people thought maybe it wouldn't have a touchscreen, because how would that
right.
work?
Right.
And now it sounds like the breakaway controllers have IR sensors. And
oh.
so the reason the Nintendo Switch faces forward in all the promotional material is that when it faces forward, you're going to be able to use those breakaway controllers and use that as a pointer, which would allow you to still select things in a touch-based game if it required.
Boy, that seems like a tough way to put a level in Mario Maker, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's at least allows it to work. You know, it may not be the ideal way to do it, but it allows them to skirt around this idea that you can't technically play the games because they're not multi-touch, you know, devices. So
right.
it's, you know, you're not like pinching and zooming. It is pointing and clicking and dragging. So yes, you wouldn't want to make a Mario Maker level that way, but it would allow them to make Mario Maker 2 and not sort of like deeply compromise it because the touchscreen is so integral to how you make that stuff. So the IR stuff is not announced, but it certainly Laura seems to have a great track record, and that seems to line up with what they would probably do.
Here's a question. Is there any precedent in... there is precedent. I guess the precedent is the Wii. Like, could they make the Switch ship such that it could pair with a Wii U gamepad?
I think that, I don't think the Wii U gamepad operates over Bluetooth, so I think it has like a proprietary.
Right. But like, you do pair a Wii U gamepad with a console.
Yeah,
right?
It's possible. My guess is they're going to want to forget the Wii U ever existed.
Totally. I would just if they make a Mario Maker 2.
Right.
It would be a nice thing to include, like, and for people who really love making levels,
yeah,
maybe there's still some function. I don't know. This is completely me talking out of my ass. Like, I have not.
I mean, they go back two generations too with the GameCube controllers and the adapter for you know, Smash and all that good stuff. So maybe, you know, a special Mario Maker Creators Edition,
yeah.
and it has a cute background. I don't know, something like that. It comes with the cat paw.
Okay,
you know,
then that's like
know,
the actual
that's
cat
what it is. There's
it's,
an that's actual
the Joy-Con.
Yes.
One of the Joy-Cons
the
is the
Joy-Con is a cat
is
paw.
Is a cat paw.
Yeah, that's how it works.
The Joy-Con is a cat paw. I think we just activated somebody. Sleeper agent somewhere just...
Whoops.
If it's you, let us know.
Yeah, just write in, like, comment, subscribe. I think we have just enough time for a dip in the bucket, the old question bucket.
Oh,
yeah.
Get in that bucket. Slop in that bucket.
Slop, yep, go right in.
Pull out some slop.
Take a little peek.
Take a little peek. What? Give me a number, someone. Someone give me
24.
A number.
24.
No.
24.
Yeah, Danielle's
you say 24?
Yeah, because it's the 24.
Oh, wow. That was
it's
quick.
A special day.
That was like...
I thought you were just a big Kiefer Sutherland fan.
Yeah. loves that Jack Bauer.
I'm just excited. It's my first day. It's the 24th.
It's good.
You know.
All right.
That's true.
So this comes in from Quinn from New Hampshire. Okay.
Good state.
I have like a note, like a, what is this actual question? And then I'll read the question. Right. Quinn from New Hampshire writes, have you ever been able to get a feel for the level of cooperation those working on a story and those working on gameplay have at a large studio? Is there usually a particular hierarchy? I ask because of the complaint of, quote, little narrative dissonance comes to mind when playing Deus Ex Human Revolution. It's clear that the writers are trying to say something meaningful, or maybe they mean Mankind Divided here.
Yeah,
it could
yeah.
be either. It's clear that the writers are trying to say something meaningful about police brutality, racial tensions, etc., but the game lets you play however you want. Even if that meant murdering every augmented citizen you came across, nobody is saying anything about it in the next cutscene. I don't begrudge the game for allowing players freedom in their play, but I wonder what the point is of trying to lay a story that is so easily betrayed by player action on top of those systems. That's from Quinn in New Hampshire. What do you guys think?
I think it depends on every single studio and uh-huh. how everything is run and all of that. But this is kind of a perfect example, of course, of you know, sort of that happening. And it's also, God, I feel like writers are brought in at weird times during projects, especially big projects. Like, they might be brought in a little late, or they might be brought in, you know, sort of while they're still developing ideas before they
right.
really know what the gameplay is like. Deus Ex is a particular history with, like, player freedom above all. So maybe that story might not have been 100% a right fit for that style of gameplay, but
right.
yeah, I think it definitely depends.
Patrick,
you are.
Do you have a sense of, like, what the general hierarchy is in terms of writers on games?
I mean, it's so specific to mm-hmm. studios and whether and specifically how much they prioritize writing as part of the basic foundations of the game design.
Right.
So you'll have some studios in which writers are brought in after designers will come up with, you know, the team will come up with the set pieces for their game.
Right. We want to have a train heist. We want to have a bank.
Right. And that'll be rooted in, you know, these are the mechanics of our game. Here's where we think they'll be interesting and challenging and fleshed out and provide players with different ways of engaging with them. And then you bring a writer in to figure out how to stitch all that together. I was talking with one of the writers or the head writer on Horizon Zero Dawn, mm-hmm. you know, the next game from Guerrilla Games, in which for that game, you know, he was really praising Guerrilla because they brought in a writer from day one.
Right.
They wanted a writer to be part of that process from the inception of that game, breaking ideas, working with the design team. But in the past, he had worked on all sorts of projects where that wasn't the case, where maybe you're this is less the case now than it was, let's say, 10 years ago. But it was very common for writers to be brought in at the very end of production. Like once all these set pieces were put together, writers were brought in to come up with dialogue. And this is especially in an age when voice acting isn't as big of a thing, where like you're really just stitching together the stuff at the last second. He would work on projects where he'd write story, he'd write dialogue, he had, you know, a flow for the game, and then 2 months before ship, this level's deleted, or this level's now being put at the beginning of the game when it was at the end of the game.
Right.
And so as a writer, often what you're tasked with is finding a way to make that work, even if there's like that has nothing to do with the story you put together. But then you have some of these developers, and I think this is very much more so now. I think, I don't know if I would say it's the majority, but for a lot of these games, writing is now becoming more and more integral. Like, let's say, I don't know this for a fact with Mafia 3, but my guess is that game couldn't have, you know, included its approach to race and its setting and mechanics without that being a conversation with writers from the very beginning, because that is core to the game.
Some of the writing also just is built to reflect what's happening in the world. Again, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, but there is a running story over the radio in that game that includes a reference to not just like, oh, Lincoln is doing this thing, but it treats it with a degree of seriousness and gravity that there's a dude running around with guns and like is killing people, and that ends up playing into another kind of mini story in a really smart way. And that's something where it's an example of something where like cognizant writers can adjust for the freedom that players might have. Deus Ex is tough because like it really wants to tell this really buttoned up cyberpunk politics story that doesn't really account for that time I jumped off a roof and used my like landing punch into the ground and killed 30 people. Like it's just never going to come up. The agency I work for is never going to be like, hey, don't do that again. Like it just doesn't. There's nothing there. So.
Like, why did you spend 30 minutes just shoving tranquilizer darts into the final boss? You could have just killed him a lot easier with a gun, you dolt.
Yep, exactly. No answer. Don't worry about it. Well,
and I think also, there are a lot of games that like embrace that dissonance, right?
Yep.
Like, that's part of the fun of video games and why the story stuff is often creates such dichotomy, because telling a story often, you know, revolves around sort of a consistent ideas that players by very nature can buck. And I think some games choose to embrace that and some games choose to work with it or around it. And often a lot of the fun I have in games is actually being contrary to the narrative that
totally.
Is presented.
Yeah, dissonance
and
is not.
It doesn't bother me. It's actually part of the appeal.
Dissonance is not a synonym for bad, right? Dissonance can mean other
Correct.
Things. So we have to wrap up.
Yeah.
Sadly. We have a very busy week
ahead.
Oh,
my God, do we ever.
By this time next week, we will launch. Waypoint.vice.com will be live. We will just be about to wrap up our 72-hour live stream. Again, for info on that, you can go to our Twitter or our Facebook, twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice. You can follow us on Twitch now, twitch.tv/waypoint. We're going to be doing some live streams every day this week in prep for the big 72-hour live stream.
Make sure the pipes work.
Yeah, got to make sure those pipes are clean and working. You know, got to get all the sput out.
Yeah.
You know?
Please
yeah.
don't
get
hack the internet
ready.
On Friday. Please.
Please don't hack the internet.
Let
be
the
bad.
Internet work on Friday.
Patrick, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Patrick Klubik on Twitter. You can find me at P Klubik on Facebook.
You can find me at Austin_Walker on Twitter and at Austin Walker Games on Facebook. Danielle,
oh
what
my
about
God.
You?
You can find me at Danielle RI on Twitter, and I made a Facebook page too. It's what's... Danielle Riendo Writer.
Ooh,
let me spell Riendo to make it easy.
Yeah, spell Riendo.
R-I-E-N-D-E-A-U. Lots of vowels. It's all in there.
Rhymes with Nintendo.
It rhymes with Nintendo. That's how people know.
That's how people... That's
make
how,
it right. easy.
Perfect. Thanks so much for everything, audience. I don't know why. Thanks for
Thank
listening.
You.
That's great. Thanks to Mitch in the sound booth, who's doing our audio engineering. Thanks to Tim, who's our podcast producer. Thanks to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off of the EP Pale Machine. You can find info on Bowen at bo-en.info. Join us on Friday for what is going to be 72 hours of...
beautiful madness.
Beautiful madness.
Yeah.
Well, and we're still going to do the podcast, right? We're
I think
just going to
so.
Do it part of the stream?
I think so.
I think is the current plan?
I think.
That's a great idea.
I think.
Yeah, kick it off live. Let's do it. And then maybe end with it, too. We'll see how we're feeling.
Yeah.
Oh, all right, Internet. Wish us luck. Peace.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.